Tonight, we explore three stories of wrongful conviction, people who lost years to prison for crimes they didn't commit, yet emerged to fight for justice and reform. These cases reveal the system's flaws and the resilience of those who turn pain into purpose. As you settle in, imagine the weight of a false accusation, the cold reality of a jail cell, and the strength it takes to rebuild. We'll meet a woman whose mistaken identification sent an innocent man away, a teenager convicted on a friend's coerced words, and a mother condemned by a detective's lies. Their journeys end, not in anger, but in advocacy that changes lives. Let these stories guide you to rest, a reminder that truth can prevail. Welcome to True Crime Sleep Stories, where we share real cases to inform and soothe, not startle. Tonight's episode focuses on three individuals wrongfully convicted who, after exoneration, dedicated their lives to fixing the system. Lie back, breathe deeply, and let these accounts of courage and change ease you into sleep. Case 1. Ronald Cotton and Jennifer Thompson Canino, an unexpected bond. In July 1984, Burlington, North Carolina was a quiet town of 40,000, where summers brought sticky heat and close-knit neighborhoods. Jennifer Thompson, a 22-year-old college student, was asleep in her apartment when an intruder broke in at 3 a.m. He raped her at knife point for 30 minutes, then fled. Traumatized but resolute, Jennifer memorized his features: height, mustache, eyes, determined to identify him. At the police station, she helped create a composite sketch and, days later, chose Ronald Cotton, a 22-year-old black factory worker, from a photo array. In a live lineup, she confirmed her choice, certain he was the attacker. Ronald, a Burlington native, was at a club with friends that night, his alibi backed by witnesses. Arrested on July 31st, he maintained his innocence. The trial in January 1985 hinged on Jennifer's testimony. No physical evidence linked Ronald. An all-white jury convicted him of rape and breaking and entering, sentencing him to life plus 54 years. At 22, he entered Central Prison in Raleigh, assigned a 6-by-8-foot cell with a thin cot. He read law books, wrote appeals, and leaned on his family's letters, his mother's prayers, his sister's notes, while enduring the prison's noise and isolation. For 11 years, Ronald fought. A 1991 retrial, triggered by a technicality, saw Jennifer identify him again, and he was reconvicted. But in 1995, DNA testing, newly available, changed everything. Samples from Jennifer's rape kit excluded Ronald and matched Bobby Poole, an inmate serving time for other crimes who resembled the sketch. Poole confessed before dying in prison. On June 30th, 1995, Ronald was released after 11 years. He was 33, free but scarred, facing a world that had moved on. Jennifer learned of the exoneration through a news report. Guilt hit hard. Her identification had cost Ronald a decade. In 1997, she requested a meeting. They met in a church where Ronald forgave her instantly, saying, "I'm not angry." Their connection grew into a partnership. They co-wrote Picking Cotton, Our Memoir of Injustice and Redemption in 2009, detailing their shared journey. Through the Innocence Project, they spoke nationwide, reaching 50,000 people by 2020, exposing eyewitness misidentification's role in 70% of wrongful convictions, per the National Registry of Exonerations. Their work led to reforms like North Carolina's 2007 Eyewitness Identification Reform Act, mandating blind sequential lineups. Ronald married, had a daughter, and worked odd jobs while advocating. Jennifer founded Healing Justice in 2014, supporting survivors and exonerees. Their friendship showed how truth and forgiveness can rebuild lives and systems. Case 2, Ryan Ferguson, From Cell to Classroom, Columbia, Missouri, November 1, 2001. Kent Heitholt, a 48-year-old Columbia Daily Tribune sports editor, was murdered in his office parking lot, beaten and strangled after a late shift. No fingerprints or DNA were found, only a smudged print on his car. The case went cold for 2 years. Ryan Ferguson, then 17, a high school junior with college dreams, was nowhere near the scene, partying with friends that Halloween night. In 2004, Ryan's friend Charles Erickson, 19, implicated him. Erickson, struggling with substance abuse, had dreams of the murder, muddled by intoxication. Under police pressure and hypnosis, a method later criticized for planting false memories, he confessed, claiming Ryan helped kill Heitholt. No physical evidence supported this. Erickson's story shifted repeatedly. Ryan, now 19 and a college freshman, was arrested in March 2004. His trial in February 2005 relied on Erickson's testimony and a janitor's vague identification, despite no forensic links. Convicted of second-degree murder and robbery, Ryan got 40 years. At 19, he entered Boone County Jail, then a medium-security prison. His 6-by-9-foot cell, with a worn cot, became home for nearly a decade. He read legal texts, wrote appeals, and survived on visits from his father, Bill, who rallied support through media and a Free Ryan campaign. In 2011, an appeals court found prosecutors withheld evidence, like a janitor's recanted testimony. Erickson also recanted, admitting coercion. On November 12, 2013, Ryan was freed after 9 years and 10 months at 28. Reentry was tough, lost education, social stigma, but Ryan pivoted to advocacy. He wrote Innocence Lost in 2015, a memoir, and launched The Clearing Podcast in 2016, analyzing wrongful convictions. His MTV series, Unlocking the Truth, investigated other cases, reaching 2 million viewers. Speaking at universities like the University of Missouri, he educated thousands on coerced confessions and judicial flaws. His advocacy helped pass Missouri's 2017 interrogation recording law, reducing false confessions. Per the Innocence Project, 29% of wrongful convictions involve false confessions. Now, 41, Ryan lives in Florida, married with a son, and continues his podcast. His journey from a prison cot to lecture halls shows how one voice can spark reform. Case 3, Deborah Milka, A Mother's Fight for the Forgotten, Phoenix, Arizona, December 2, 1989. Deborah Milka, 25, was a single mother to Christopher, just 4 years old, a lively boy who loved arcades. That morning, she left him with James Stiers and Roger Scott, acquaintances, for a mall outing. Hours later, they claimed he was lost. police found Christopher's body that evening in a desert wash, shot 3 times in the head. Stiers and Scott confessed, but shockingly accused Deborah of orchestrating it for a $5,000 insurance policy, a claim with no evidence, as no such policy existed. Detective Armando Saldate Jr. interrogated Deborah alone, unrecorded, for over 2 hours. She denied everything, but Saldate reported a confession she never gave, alleging she planned the murder. No witnesses or forensics tied her. Her alibi was solid. She was working. Yet, on Christmas Eve, she was arrested. Her 1990 trial rested on Saldate's testimony and the co-conspirators' shaky claims. Convicted of conspiracy and felony murder, Deborah, 26, was sentenced to death. She entered Perryville Prison's death row, one of 10 women in Arizona's history. Her 7-by-12-foot cell with a concrete cot was her world for 22 years. Solitary confinement meant 23-hour lockdowns. Visits with her parents were through glass. She read law, wrote to supporters, and mentored inmates, holding on to hope. The Innocence Project joined her case in 2007, uncovering Saldate's history. 5 cases overturned for misconduct, including lying under oath, per the Ninth Circuit Court. In 2013, the Ninth Circuit vacated her conviction, citing Saldate's withheld record. On March 23rd, Deborah, 48, was released after 22 years. Re-entry brought PTSD and public scrutiny, but she fought back. Her 2019 book, The Innocent Behind Bars, detailed her ordeal. At Innocence Network conferences, she spoke to 1,000-plus attendees, focusing on women's unique challenges in wrongful convictions, often judged as mothers, as women make up 10% of exonerees per the National Registry. She lobbied for Arizona's 2015 interrogation recording law, reducing coerced confessions. Now 61, Deborah lives quietly, gardening and volunteering with exoneree groups. Her advocacy highlights women's overlooked struggles in the system. These 3 stories, Ronald and Jennifer's partnership, Ryan's educational mission, and Deborah's advocacy for women, share a core truth. Wrongful convictions test the human spirit, but they can also spark transformation. Ronald, freed after 11 years, and Jennifer, who faced her error, built a friendship that reformed eyewitness procedures, saving others from misidentification's trap. Ryan, after nearly a decade, turned his pain into a platform, teaching thousands about false confessions and pushing Missouri's recording laws. Deborah, enduring 22 years on death row, now amplifies women's voices, driving Arizona's interrogation reforms. Together, they show that innocence, once buried, can rise to reshape justice. Over 3,500 exonerations since 1989 prove the system's flaws, but these survivors prove its potential for repair. Their work, lineup reforms, recorded interrogations, and advocacy programs, builds a fairer future. As you rest, let their resilience inspire you. Small acts, questioning biases, supporting reform, carry their legacy forward. Thank you for joining us for this episode of True Crime Sleep Stories. Sleep well, knowing truth endures and forgiveness heals. Good night.